tanker explosion on the Mississippi River, and Egypt mends the wounds of war by returning Israeli dead with military honors. Stay with us. Now, dry Shell Oil is shelling out big bucks to residents of Martinez. Stay with us. A San Francisco church headed by the Reverend Jim Jones. Tonight, we look at church finances and where some of the money is going.
Oh, my God.
Most people believe in God, and most people, if they met him face to face, would do whatever he wanted them to. And most people here at the People's Temple in San Francisco believe that the Reverend Jim Jones was God. How did he convince them? Well, there's a variety of means. Some of them were working miracles. Others were revelations.
It was just too dedicated, and I wasn't that controlled Charles Manson had over his followers. And think about some of the statements that they've signed that they would kill people.
And then Reverend Jones, thousands, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of dollars in offerings from people everywhere he went. But where did the money go?
I'm not at all sure what he did with all the money, how he spent it, that is. I know that he had it buried in several places in Redwood Valley. Cash was buried. There were checking savings accounts all over Los Angeles, San Francisco, Lake County, Ukiah. And he had total control of those accounts. And, of course, everyone who was a member signed statements saying that he could take all of the money at any time and do with it whatever he wanted. There were thousands and thousands and thousands, I would even say millions of dollars, because each time he would take an offering in a meeting, and there were four, five, six offerings per meeting, he would always claim that we didn't get enough. You know, we have a certain cause that we've got to take care of, a family that needs feeding or whatever, and we didn't get enough money. And we'd take up another offering, and there would be thousands in the offering.
Did he have any techniques that he used in order to impress people to get more money?
He certainly would. He would tell people that there were some people in the audience today who, if they did not give, they would drop dead. They would have a heart attack. He would, one time he used to do hexes. One time he said that he knew someone here who wasn't giving their money and they hadn't collected the amount that he wanted. And he made a sign like this with his hands and then went like this and said, "Now the hex is on you."
What effect did it have on the people that you saw?
We got money. We got money. And, boy, I tell you, we could get $20,000, $15,000 totals for weekends. It was his goal.
The Reverend Jones, shown here performing some of his miracles and exclusive photos smuggled out of the church by members, is now at his mission in Guyana, South America. It's called an agricultural mission, and many of his followers believe it will be their refuge during an upcoming white supremacist takeover, according to former believers. Reverend Jones is reportedly forced to stay in the South American country because of a serious ear infection. People's Temple supporters say he wants very much to come back and answer the charges that have been leveled against him for his so-called healing. But sources inside the church have been telling different stories. They say many of the upper echelon members are preparing to leave the temple in San Francisco and go to live in Guyana. Today, temple workers could be seen loading crates onto three flatbed trailers for a trip that will reportedly end in Miami, where they will be transferred to a ship. This isn't the first time such shipments have been made, but important figures in the People's Temple hierarchy are unavailable to us at all hours of the day and night, and they no longer return phone calls. People's Temple workers merely say things like, "The Reverend Michael Prokes is not here. If you have any questions, please call our attorney." Jim Clancy, Channel 2 Action News, San Francisco.
Human beings in this world that, you know, whatever else is going, I mean, if it's all true, I wouldn't give a shit, okay? If it were all true, I wouldn't care. Because what he's shown me by his acts, you know, is enough for me.
That's a statement.
No, I mean, it's true, you know?
I agree with that because, you know, Jim has done so many things, and I mean, it's been by his example that others have been willing to help the little guy who you don't even hear about.
Yeah, see, and that's what, I mean, look, I've been around a lot of, quote, Christians, you know, and they're quite willing to take courageous stands and blah, 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 so long as they're down for their benefit in some way. And this is the only guy I've ever heard of who is willing to do the same thing where it doesn't be down for their benefit, where it costs him out of his own pocket.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, there's got to be something else happening. You know what I mean? And that's what blew me away.
Well, the thing that struck me when I came was that, if I saw nothing else, this would have done it for me. It's people coming in, like in the wee hours of the morning, who were strung out on drugs, suicidal, had no place else to go. They would have ended up in jail, or dead.
Yeah.
And, they were taken in, put in a structured program where they had immediate acceptance, but yet gradually came out of it through concern and through programs where they could apply their talents and abilities,
mm-hmm.
and would fill the vacuum and cause them to go on drugs or commit crimes in the first place.
Sure.
There have been just countless. This is what makes up our congregation. And there's a unity here, and it's like a large family. And it's, I don't know, it's something that's really indescribable. You really have to live inside.
No, I see. You know, I know what you're talking about. And I guess that's the thing that really has captured me about the whole thing. You know, is just that, I mean, it's, you know, you want to find fault with the Lancet Street, you want to find fault with, what's another drug program, blocking them.
In the city
too. Synod.
Oh, right.
You know, anybody that's doing anything heavy is going to be subject to criticism.
Sure. And you're also going to have people who leave and tend to have reasons why they leave.
You know, look, I represent a lot of junkies, you know, various sorts. I mean, in my criminal practice, and you know, you'll get some, they'll go off to Synanon or to, the Lancet or whatever, and they, you know, they come out 2 years later and say, thank God, Jesus, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, you know, really got my head screwed on and blah, blah, blah. And but the ones who split, you know, and they bust them on a new beef later, and I thought, hey, I can't do anything for you, schmuck, you ran away from the last program, you know, well, those motherfuckers want to beat my ass and shave my head, blah, 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 and they're fucking crazy, they do this, and they do that. Okay. You know, that's a given. Fine. They beat your ass and shave your head. You know, you're a fucking scumbag junkie.
Right.
Somebody should have done that 20 years ago. You wouldn't have been one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't have trouble with any of that bullshit. I mean, I know that, the only way you ever get people to look at themselves is to grab by the goddamn neck and slam them up against the wall and say, look what you're doing to yourself.
Yeah, right.
You know, I know that sometimes you have to grab and you have to shake.
Takes different techniques for different people.
So, anyhow, you tell Jim that I just, you know, whatever, anything he needs, call me. I'm impressed with him. I think that he's doing really good shit.
That
and I think everybody over there is.
Means more than you know to us.
Well,
I mean, we've had good support, but, you know, I mean, you tend to lose your perspective when you're
in
disappointment.
Of course you do. Of course you do. You're just being shit on from every side. You're sitting there thinking, what am I doing this for? I could go back to the media and make a lot of money. You know, come on. What are you, crazy? You got to sit there and, you know, live on $60 a week and take abuse, too? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
How's Karen?
She's doing okay. You know what she's doing?
No.
She's Wally Manuel's law clerk.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's heavy duty.
Good.
She's
good.
Heavy duty, yeah.
Please tell her hello.
I will for sure.
And thank you so much.
Yeah, and listen, you know, I want you to know Karen, I'm sure, shares my views. I mean, she was really upset when she heard about the attack. She called me up. You know, I mean, she was very impressed. And you know, she was also one of these people who had kind of a, you know, she heard that, I don't know why, you know, that up in Ukiah, kids got spanked. I mean, you know, who, I don't know what the hell it was,
yeah.
But, you know, so she also had one of those, you know, that was her image and her knowledge.
Yeah.
And after the thing with Camus, she said, Jesus, you know, these are very far out people.
Yeah. If there's, you know, anything that you're doing that you need, you know, support, like in the courtroom or whatever, let us know.
That's right. All right. I will for sure.
We'll be around. We're going to
proceed. I know you will. Listen, you'll ride past this bullshit. You'll be strong and well, you know.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, Bob Ganesda.
Hi, Bob. Mike Probst.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Okay.
Good. I've been trying to get in touch with you guys.
Oh, yeah?
Haven't you gotten any of my messages?
No.
Oh, I left messages for Jim.
Oh.
Two or three times.
I
came back from vacation.
First of all, I wanted to give you a new number because the old private line was, somebody got it. We got some harassing calls on it.
All right.
And it's 922-9597.
Okay.
And I just wanted to bounce a couple of things off you and see how
sure.
you feel about it. We're doing our own investigation of the sources that started all this
mm-hmm.
and getting affidavits together to show them and what they are. They're all been involved in various kinds of, like, crime. Some of them, when they were here, tried to get us to do violence as a, you know, a tactic, and were making their own ammunition. I think they may have been provocateurs from the beginning, but others of them molested their own children. They embezzled and stole from the church, even attempted blackmail.
Mm.
We're getting affidavits to this effect together. Everyone that I've talked with, almost to the person, have said, whatever you do, don't call a press conference. Just wait until, you know, the smoke dies down, then come forth with this stuff, because this is a tactic. It's a obviously a carefully orchestrated smear campaign.
Yeah.
They're using whoever they can. Somebody has brought these people together, and they have collaborated on their stories. There's a lot of inconsistencies, and they're saying that and this is Charles Gary's recommendation that, you know, we do not call a press conference either. That we can't do anything, come out looking bad, and that we should first, you know, get all of our documentation together and then release it.
I think that's good advice. If you're right, okay. I don't mean that if you're right in your case. I mean just generally.
Yeah.
When you're right and you're attacked, and you will clearly be able to demonstrate that you are right, it is always better to wait the maximum time that you can afford to do. In the CIA case, when we were attacked, okay, some people wanted me to go on the attack against Murphy and Reagan and the congressman, because they were attacking us every day. For 3 weeks, I refused to move. Then I made one short statement, not much, just a little bit. And then I waited again, and a month later, everybody knew that Reagan and Murphy and Talcott had lied, totally. And it was so much better than if I had tried to defend us at the beginning.
See, Jim's going through a lot of anxiety right now. He generally does have a health problem. He's lost hearing in one of his ears.
Oh, wow.
I don't think it's permanent, but he's going to have it drained soon. And he, you know, naturally wants to rip into these people and
know that.
What they are.
And the anxiety is so high that it's almost worth doing anyway, okay, to relieve that. But I don't think it's good advice to do it. That's what I think Gary is right.
That's what everybody's been saying. And
but you know what? It's going to hurt you.
From my background, of course, I have a lot of anxiety myself.
And in the interim, your people are relating to you differently, right?
Well, some are.
Sure, well, I mean, but I mean, there's no question. Some are observably, and others are anyway.
Yeah.
All right. And you're not as useful an organization while the charges hang over you. You know that.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think it's worth it if the time frame isn't too long. In other words, you're talking about another 2 to 4 weeks, right?
Well, I don't know. That's the question.
If it's going to take 6 months, it's too long.
Right. That's the whole question. I think this is aimed to really bring us down, because Jim is viewed, and this is something that I've felt a long time.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Right, are you taping this?
No. Taping?
Huh?
No, taping.
Right. It's kind of a long article, actually, you know? So a whole page?
Okay.
With two photos.
Okay.
Okay. In the poor black Fillmore district of San Francisco, the Reverend Jim Jones is revered as a good Samaritan with patrons in very high places. As pastor of the People's Temple, one of the largest interfaith churches in California, Jones not only claims God's power to heal the sick, but also wields palpable clout among the city and state political leaders. The governor, lieutenant governor, mayor, sheriff, and district attorney have all visited the temple, and during the 1976 presidential campaign, Jones himself shared a platform with Rosalynn Carter. Last December, the charismatic preacher who can muster black voters was named chairman of the San Francisco Housing Authority by Mayor George Moscone. But now Jones stands accused by 30 former temple members of building his power through fear, fraud, physical beatings, the appropriation of parishioners' property, and possible misuse of government funds. The accusations were published in two August issues of New West magazine, which call for an investigation of the temple's financial and disciplinary practices. Church representatives promptly denied the charges, but in a pair of surprise moves last week, Jones resigned from the Housing Authority, and District Attorney Joseph Freitas announced that he would look into the accusations. No one has yet filed a formal complaint against Jones, who temple officials said was unreachable at the church's 27,000-acre South American farm colony in Guyana. The city's most powerful politician still seems solidly behind the controversial minister. Mayor Moscone said he said he saw no evidence that Jones has broken any laws, and in a recent Sunday morning sermon at the temple, Black State Assemblyman Willie Brown labeled the attacks, quote, a measure of the church's effectiveness, close of quote. Jones preaches a religious socialism that he himself, it appears, is the first to practice. His church, which claims 20,000 members statewide, sponsors a drug rehabilitation program, a free restaurant and medical clinic, and a legal aid service. More ironically, Jones encourages his flock to give up their private property and live in low-rent apartments leased by the church from the city. Jones and his wife live modestly above the temple, where they are raising a multiracial family of 7 adopted children, plus their own son. But his social activism also is expressed as politics, and on election day, the poor deliver for their leader. In 2 recent close races for mayor and district attorney, Jones' regimented followers were considered important to the winners. According to some former church members, however, Jones' power is based as much on fear as on fraud as on faith. His services are often held behind locked doors, and even then Jones is protected by bodyguards. The breakaway parishioners describe ritual beatings and humiliating group encounters held at all-night sessions. A former secretary to Jones reported that the preacher faked healings by displaying chicken guts as tissue he had miraculously removed from cancer patients. Others said they'd been persuaded and beating over their homes to the church and had been talked into giving the temple government funds they received for running foster care homes. When New West first considered investigating the People's Temple, the editors were barraged with pleas from politicians and businessmen to kill the story. When the editors persisted, some were harassed at home by anonymous callers. Meanwhile, other local newsmen reported similar coercion, and only when word of the pressure campaign appeared in a local newspaper column did ex-members of the temple volunteer to tell of their experiences. In separate interviews with Newsweek, former followers of Jones corroborated the New West report. Mickey Touche, 26, told how she and 11 other students slept in a crowded garage and were given a weekly dole of $2 each as members of a temple commune. Touche, who was white, said that Jones, who was part American Indian, told them how ugly and horrible it was to be white, that's in quotes, and, quote, not to have sex because we were all latent homosexuals, close quote. Laura Cornelius, 52, a black woman, said that Jones promised his followers a haven in Guyana when, as he predicted, fascists took over the U.S. Quote, he said they had a plan to exterminate blacks like they did the Jews, close quote, Cornelius recalled. She also described the ritual by temple members that dramatized the Ku Klux Klan lynching. That's why people turned over all they had, she said. He told us the whites would take it. Others reported threats against their lives if they dared to talk to police and said they'd been made to sign false confessions to crimes such as conspiracy against the government. Jim always said he had an in with the police, said Deanna Myrtle, 38, so we thought going to the police would be suicide. Church officials have issued statements countercharging that some of the dissenters were terrorists and child molesters. Throughout the controversy, Jones has remained at the Guyana farm, which the church says it funds with $150,000 annually, and some suspect that the Reverend Mr. Jones may be the first to take up permanent asylum in the Guyana Haven.
And what are the pictures?
The pictures are a picture of him and another picture of the church, inside the church, some activity.
Okay.
Well, how does it sound to you?
Well, actually, from my perspective, it doesn't sound good, but...
Doesn't sound good?
No.
You don't think that's a fair piece of reporting?
Well, there's just, you know, naturally, I don't feel it's fair because I don't think the things are true that they were saying about us.
We're not presenting them as true. We're just presenting
right,
that this
right.
is what people said.
Yeah, right.
You know, Newsweek is not making any charges against this church. I mean,
right.
And you know yourself that I did call up and say if there was any way possible to talk to the Reverend. I mean, it's not like you didn't get your chance to present your side. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not like we did this in an adversary or undercover type way.
I understand that. It's just, you know, you do. I mean, just the fact that there's so many people who, here's a program that, you know, has kept people from being on the streets, from being violent. I mean, out of all our members, we haven't had any people in jail or committing violence. I mean, you just don't find that anywhere. And
right.
Here you have the people that are being dignified who are just telling these outrageous things that tend to discredit our work.
Well, I think we mentioned that also. It says your church, which has, 20, has a drug rehabilitation program, free restaurant, medical clinic, legal aid service. That's in there.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's a balanced story. And, of course, I mean, naturally, any publicity that's not favorable is bad publicity.
Yeah.
But these people, they got their story to tell, too, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what they say.
Right. Now, the only other thing I was going to add is that our feeling that, we're being attacked because of our consistent support of the Caribbean socialist community.
Mm-hmm.
And, we've felt that these people have been brought together because, let me tell you, Mr. Gill, this is the most unlikely conglomeration of people. They would have never gotten together on their own.
Mm-hmm.
they're just very, but that's something that Jim said himself about the support.
Yeah. But another thing is that, apparently you have told the people in your church who are, still happy, believers and followers, and not to talk. So,
no, that's our attorney's advice.
Right, but at this time,
you know the reason, though, don't you?
Well, what's the reason?
Well, naturally, if, we're going to pursue litigation, that would affect the case.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, that's the reason behind that.
Right.
But I do appreciate your reading, too, very much. And, you did what you could with it.
Yeah, I think you should get a copy tomorrow, so you can look at it,
Right. Is it in the religion section?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I do appreciate your taking the time to read it to me.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And we spoke before.
Yeah.
Listen, Ms. Probst, we have decided, not we, but the people in our magazine have decided to do a piece on the People's Temple. And one of the things we'd be interested in doing is perhaps getting some comment from Reverend Jones, if that is possible.
Okay, well, I'll try.
In all fairness, to have a balanced story and to have his point of view, represented just in the same amount of fairness as anyone else.
Right.
You know?
Okay. I know that he wants to. He's going through a lot of anxiety right now because he wanted to call a press conference and everyone has advised against it, including our own attorney. And as we prepare our case, we're doing a lot of investigation and getting affidavits together and so forth. But, I will check into it. I imagine that...
Why is he going through a lot of anxiety right now?
Well, because he can't be here to, answer these charges.
Well, I don't think that... really, in terms of what we're writing, is the kind of story where we are making any charges against Mr. Jones himself. Do you understand what I'm saying? We are just writing the kind of story that sort of reflects what is happening here, and we've had people who told us one side of the story, and I think, just in journalistic fairness, you're a newsman yourself. I mean, it's always good to check with the... other side, and say, look, we want to give you, as much time and as necessary or as much, to explain your own point of view.
You have to understand the background of our people. They're right now very paranoid and upset about the media.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they haven't gotten a fair shake because, when this all started with the magazine, who interviewed him for 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't use any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, he feels like he has to follow what his members want,
mm-hmm.
and right now, and it's frustrating for me too because I would like to answer, but I understand their being upset and their paranoia,
mm-hmm.
because it just initiated, the whole thing started with that, and the mm-hmm. tactics seem to be to throw out hundreds of outrageous charges,
mm-hmm.
get us involved in a dialogue, and put us on the in a defensive posture and dignify the charges,
mm-hmm.
and of course, with his problem there, he hasn't been able to, the tactic was just to keep the thing going
mm-hmm.
indefinitely, and it's a difficult thing to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
They just feel that,
right.
And of course, the attorney wants to, just have our case not do anything premature.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of the news, Mr. Probst, I'm sure you realize that a story is a story. They don't go away, and the media doesn't go away either.
No,
the media is always there. The stories maybe go away. And the thing is that we are just trying now to, balance out our story more, and
you know, give Reverend Jones his opportunity to say, well, you know, I'm paranoid about the media, but, you know, maybe I'll get a fair shake this time, and, you know, and here's my point of view. And the people in New York, you know, said that we should give you another shot and try to get this point of view and try to see what the Reverend has to say about all of these things, you know.
Okay. Well, let me see. You know, I can't do anything about consulting with the attorney. He's insisted that, you know,
sure,
not get into it without consulting with him.
Sure.
In fact, all the media has been referred to him.
Yeah.
But I will do that. And what sort of deadline are you under?
I'd like to as soon as possible, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll pursue it. And
well, can you call me back and let me know what the status is?
Right. I don't know if Mr. Gary is in town today. I'll check.
Well, if he's not in town, can you call me back and still let me know anything that you found out?
I will.
So that I don't, you know, just sort of sit around and wait, you
okay.
know? I mean, is that okay?
Sure.
I mean, I'm not trying to press you or anything
no, I
like
understand.
That, but, you know, if you find out that he's not in town and or something like that, just call me back and say, well, he's not in town right now. And
okay.
That's the way things are, okay?
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.